You're listening to Me and Paranormal You with your host, Ryan Singer. It's more fun to believe.
Third year bonus.
Yeah, here we go. Here we go. It is more fun to believe. Welcome to the program. My name's Ryan Singer. Thank you for listening to Me and Paranormal You. This is a third year bonus. Can we get into this? Can we get down to it? Can we get to the nitty gritty? Are you on one tonight like you were last week? Let's just say I might not be on the same one, but I might be kind of on one. There's a book called Formerly Top Secret, Air Force Reports of Encounters Between Our Jets and Extraterrestrial Vehicles. Molecular biological analysis of extraterrestrial technology in our cells, written by Stephen Bernath. These are formerly top secret reports that I got my hands on this. And I can't tell you how I got my hands on it because I don't remember. It's not that, they're... it's not some secret operation. I don't have a mole inside the... inside the government. I just don't remember how I got this book, but I'm grateful to have it. It's a really interesting book. It's one of these books you can just kind of open up and start reading any of the things. For example, let me give some information, because I mean, UFOs now have been publicly acknowledged by the government. We all know that, right? We're all on board. And then you start getting into things like, you know, are we going to be talking about stigmata? Anti-gravity, teleportation, mind control, ova harvesting. I mean, these are some interesting things. This is from chapter two. Let's just get into it. Maybe I should just record the audiobook of this. Chapter two, this is page 47. Craft occupants, masters of anti-gravity, teleportation, and long-range mind control. That is the title of the chapter. During the early morning hours of August 13th, 1975, near the... Should I read it like that? Should I read it like it's an investigative report, like an old episode of Hard Copy? During the early mornings hours of August 13th, 1975, near the town of Alamogordo, New Mexico, a disc-shaped craft dropped out of the sky and dove towards United States Air Force Sergeant Charles L. Moody. Okay, we don't have to go all Robert Stack. That was my best Robert Stack impersonation. Not the best, but hey, we'll move on. Moody tried to escape, but his car refused to start. He saw humanoid figures inside the craft and felt himself overpowered by numbness. Then the craft took off, and his car started without difficulty, but he noticed a very strange thing. He had inexplicably lost 1.5 hours. Researcher Richard Hall reported the next day his lower back was inflamed and there was a small puncture wound over his spine. A few days later, he had a body rash. Over the next 2 months, memory of the lost time gradually returned. He had been on a craft and in telepathic communication with small humanoid beings, about 4 feet 8 inches, that is 1.42 meters, tall. They had whitish-gray skin, large heads, large eyes, small slit-like mouths, and mask-like facial features overall. Their clothing was black and skin-tight, except the leader, who was dressed in silver-white. This kind of humanoid is seen so often that it has been given a specific name, a gray alien, or simply a gray. The Greys pulled the paralyzed Moody out of his car, brought him on board their craft, put him on a table, and subjected him to a physical examination. When he was lying on the table, he wanted to jump up and hit the Greys, but he was completely under the influence of an unseen force that did not allow him to move. Moody said, quote, "I couldn't move. I just couldn't do anything," end quote. That's from page 179 of a book written by, or a report by Fowler, 1994. He recalled that one of the Greys did something to his back with a rod-like device, and this explains how he got the small puncture wound over his spine. This wound was inexplicable to him before he recovered his memory of what transpired on board the alien craft. The Grays are consummate masters of anti-gravity. Moody said, quote, "It's going to sound ridiculous, and I hope nobody sends me a straitjacket, but these beings did not walk. They glided," end quote. As we shall see, there are many reports of extraterrestrials gliding and floating. There are also many reports of abductees being paralyzed, brought on board alien craft, and subjected to physical examinations that leave tangible marks on their bodies afterwards. Strikingly similar accounts from people who do not know each other. This is me going off book here. This is something that's fascinating. You know how we like to muse about all things here, and the paranormal obviously is what we tend to focus on. It anchors us essentially, but the esoteric, the mystical, the supernatural, the religious, the or whatever, the unknown, the strange, and the scientific. All these things tie into what we are interested in over here. Sorry, I had to clear my throat there. I've been eating too many Raisinets. You a fan of the Raisinet? Raisinets, milk chocolate made with whole fruit. California raisins covered in chocolate. Raisinets. Get you some. I'm not sponsored by Raisinets. And if I was, they would probably, I mean, that right there was worth about $10 million. Get you some. Did I just give them their slogan? Raisinets. Get you some. I'll be waiting for a check. Venmo me, Raisinets. Strikingly similar accounts from people who do not know each other. This is what we were talking about in like the advent of fire, other inventions, other breakthroughs in human history, how they sporadically will arise in different parts of the earth. Different groups of people who have no connection to one another, creating the same thing, the similar thing, invention, breakthrough, innovation, roughly at the same time. This is the interesting thing about that. They have no connection to one another. They're not even, they have no communication with each other. There's no way they could communicate with each other. It's like someday in the future we're going to realize that's not true. That has never been true. We are all connected through consciousness, potentially. Well, not even potentially. I believe that. And so if you're thinking it, I'm thinking it. Your great idea is my great idea, so on and so forth. My great idea is your great idea. That doesn't mean I give you ownership to go profit off of it, okay? Just the same way you're not giving me permission to profit off my ideas, even though we share the same mind. I mean, all copywriting and trademarking goes out the window, I guess. I mean, I believe in a future where none of that shit is even around anyway, right? Okay. So, I think we see the same thing here with abductions and UFO reports. And these people who have no connection to one another are sharing strikingly similar stories, and the details are spot on with each other practically. So it's, and we see this in many, between lives, Life Between Lives, that book as well, when it comes to past life experiences, written by Dr. Michael Newton. It was the one book on my bookcase when I went to look at the name to strike my memory that was covered by something sticking out. Go figure, right? So I had to stand up. Oh my God, can you believe I had to stand up? So these things, these similar accounts, these details that are the same between total strangers, these are interesting. These are one of the interesting signposts or characteristics of these stories that I think that speak to people growing more interested, right? When strangers share the same story about something that's unbelievable with similar details, even though they don't know of each other or know of the other person's story in advance, it becomes compelling. I guess that's the word I'm looking for. Very compelling stuff. So let's get back into this. Dr. David M. Jacobs, associate professor, professor of history at Temple University, interviewed 60 abductees and published the results in an interesting book entitled Secret Life, First-Hand Accounts of UFO Abductions. That was 1993. Many of the abductees reported that they had been abducted repeatedly. So Jacob's study covers more than 300 distinct abductions. The abductees interviewed by Jacobs do not all resemble, quote, contactees, end quote. In the 1950s, contactees tried to make people believe that they had met with alien spacemen, rode with them in their spacecraft to other planets, attended interplanetary council meetings, and been specially chosen by the aliens to reveal their message to mankind. Does this sound familiar? This message can get, obviously, bastardized, and people can cling on to this narrative for selfish and you know, very, you know, what is it, monetary reasons? I mean, I don't know. We don't have to go down that, like, that whole Corey Good, David Wilcock alley here. But, you know, it's... this is proprietary information that only I have. Only I have been chosen to give it to you. I am going to trademark things. I am going to make money off of the blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. Contactees strenuously exerted themselves to achieve fame and money, and their stories were clearly appealing to their egos. In contrast, abductees shun publicity. The abductees in Jacob's study requested him not to reveal their true identities, and so pseudonyms are used. Abductees' stories are crushing to their ego. The Greys carry them off against their will and treat them like laboratory animals. Abductees are subjected to humiliating physical examinations, which often include painful procedures. Abductees, quote, feel violated and victimized, end quote. Interesting distinction here, which I guess I've never really considered it with this clarity or in terms this clear and concise, the difference between a contactee and an abductee. Big difference. Making contact obviously has many different connotations, and they are in stark contrast to the connotations that the word abductee carry with them. No one wants to be abducted. To the best of my knowledge, no one wants to be abducted. Now, lots of people are looking for contact of all kinds, and I'm not just talking about aliens, right? But no one wants to be abducted in any way, shape, or form. That's interesting. Jacobs discovered that although the abductees in this study did not know each other and were not familiar with UFO abduction literature, their accounts were remarkably similar to each other in many important details, as described below. He said, quote, practically all the abductees said they were experiencing similar physical, mental, and reproductive procedures. Even the smallest details of the events were confirmed many times over. Abduction accounts have a richness and abundance of similar, frequently exact detail, and the extraordinary convergence of the abductee narratives across all cultural boundaries. For example, mind scanned visualization and many of their abduction procedures have never been publicized or written about even in the most esoteric UFO literature, yet virtually all abductees describe them. Abductees tell essentially the same story regardless of their age, race, religion, upbringing, occupation, economic status, educational level, intelligence, lifestyle, or ethnic or cultural background. This would not be so if the accounts were internally generated. Abduction accounts are remarkably free from personal elements. Spielberg's movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind and the UFO Incident, a 1975 television movie showing the Betty and Barney Hill abduction. Ooh, classic. That's a classic one. One of the most classic, one might argue, did depict aliens as small humanoids with big heads and large eyes, but not mind scan and other procedures reported by Jacobs. Now, this is interesting. What is interesting? This idea that abductees tell essentially the same story regardless of all of these differences. And he just ticked off, listed all of the potential differences anyone could ever have between them and another person, right? for the most part. Now, many times you hear the, you know, when people are discussing the phenomena and all these different things, the discussion always, it's an interesting discussion to have, by the way, and I'm not poo-pooing this because I get fascinated by it and I love, you know, musing about it and also hearing other people talk about it. The way the stories that we tell, the way they evolve and the way human stories have evolved over time and what does that mean and, you know, why did, you know, what used to be aliens are now, or used to be angels are now aliens, and used to be, you know, et cetera, et cetera, or ghosts or fairies, then angels, then aliens, and then what's next? A computer simulation? I mean, who knows, right? That is interesting how the narrative, the collective narrative that human beings experience has evolved and how these changes happen and are shared, in fact. Now, there is something to be said about trying to figure out what is internally generated, right? Internally generated means that it's, you know, I don't want to say it's made up, but it, obviously it's coming from the inside, you know, our own mind, our own ideas, our own impressions. Now, when you're experiencing something outside of yourself, something unexplainable, we've also discussed recently about when your mind doesn't have anything to go on, it just kind of makes it up, right? So, what can it be? Mm-hmm. We don't know. So when all of these people from different places, different beliefs, different life experiences are sharing the same details of something extraordinary and something that's also purported to not be real by the mainstream scientific viewpoint that dominates our way of life, one has to start wondering what's going on here, right? Because like they're talking about here, it's something that's almost shameful, embarrassing, when someone feels they've been victimized. This does not feed their ego. It actually, you know, works against it. So, how are they all telling the same story? How are they tapped in to the same details? Is it the collective consciousness and the narrative that all human beings, all of us, all potentially all sapient and sentient creatures have access to, whether we realize it or not? Is that the answer? They always say in scientific discussions, and I can't remember the name of this thing, the simplest solution is the most likely. So, is the simplest, not so simple to say simplest, is the simplest solution that all of these people are tapped into a collective consciousness that we haven't identified and defined officially in the mainstream scientific community or just community in general? Although there are people, scientists working, Dr. Roger Nelson is one of them. Check that interview out we did talking about the Global Consciousness Project. It's also on YouTube. Is that the simplest solution? That all these people unwittingly are tapped into the collective unconscious and daydreamed this somehow or had a very vivid dream in accessing the same details of a shared story that is written in the depths of our mind somehow, even though we might not have ever heard the story before? Is that the simplest solution, or is the simplest solution that all these people had an experience and they're just telling the truth about what happened? And even though they don't know each other, the details are extremely similar because it's the same experience. It's the same entities. It's the same extraterrestrials abducting them and doing the same things. Two different individuals, all over the world. Is that the simplest? I don't know. I guess you could argue the fine points of each option to try to decide what is so simple about aliens, you know, flying ships and traveling through space-time and abducting people and then returning them, and how do they, you know, this whole phenomenon of lost time, blah, blah. But it's like, well, why are we focused on the nuts and bolts of how aliens are more advanced than us? Or are we arguing, well, you know, the validity of the idea that a collective unconscious even exists and that this story is buried somewhere deep inside there, that some people just randomly happen to, what are the chances that they're randomly going to access the same little tiny little corner or pull on the same thread of this narrative that's buried deep in that global unconsciousness or consciousness and report back as if it actually happened to them? That's not easy to pick, maybe for some people, but for me, it's, the choice is clear. The simplest one is that, hey, these people had an experience and they're just telling you about it from their memory. And this is what happened. Let's take a quick break so I can drink some water. Love your water. Tell it you love it. Tell it it's beautiful. And you will become beautiful. And you will be loved. While I got you here, let me tell you something about the tarot restless. This is my buddy Winslow Dumain created a totally unique deck of tarot cards. And this is set during the final days of an infertility apocalypse. Okay, now, it uses morbid imagery to explore themes of trauma, abuse, and recovery. This thing is, it's a piece of art. It's artwork. And the, you know, when you see the imagery, it's striking. And it's beautiful. It's the third edition of the deck. Totally illustrated by hand. There's a short story with every card. It all takes place in the same world, the same universe. The deck comes with a book of stories. There are 100 cards, 78 of the Tarot Restless, 12 of the Zodiac Retrograde, and 10 of the Oracle Inimical. The Kickstarter is live right now. It started going live on February 1st. It runs for 30 days, so you still got some time to get in there. So you can go to winslowdumain.com. That's Winslow, Dumaine.com. You can find a link to it there. Also link to this in the show notes. Oh my God. I mean, it's not just me telling you about it. You want to hear some praise? It's been praised by metal legends across the country. Kristen Hader of Lingua Ignota. I'm probably saying this, I'm not a huge metal fan, called it amazing. Jeff Whitehead of Leviathan, I've heard of them, called it incredible, with more praise from George Clark of Death Haven, Stevie Floyd of Dark Castle, and others. Oh my God. I mean, this is just really cool. Check out some of the imagery. Go there. Go to the Kickstarter. You know, contribute to the creation of art. Like I said, it's the third edition of the deck. Get out there, support Winslow, and you know, check this out. The Tarot Restless. Man, it's really fucking rad. And we're back. So let me tell you this. There's a lot going on with what we've covered so far, right? There's, you know, trying to understand the difference between global consciousness or global unconsciousness, and which I guess you don't hear a lot of people talking about, the collective unconscious. I guess you hear it said that way a lot more than global unconsciousness. You have the strikingly similar stories of abductees. I guess it depends what part of the country you're from, how you want to say that. But there's all these different things: mind control, paralysis, anti-gravity, teleportation, long-range mind control, mind scanned, we mentioned that, stigmata, implants. I want to talk about stigmata a little bit. Desires induced from afar that we perceive as our own, long-range behavior control. I mean, I think MK Ultra, you know, that's probably ringing a bell for some of you. Mysterious scars that appear overnight. Before we get to, like, maybe we'll go to stigmata after this, but let's just read the section on board the alien craft, the physical examination. Once on board the alien flying machine, several Greys escort abductees to a room in which naked men, women, and children are lying on tables and being physically examined by other Greys. This room can be large. Some abductees report up to 200 examination tables. Greys lead the abductee to a table and assist her in removing her clothes. The Greys let the clothes fall on the floor and stay there during the examination. The abductee gets on the table. The abductee finds that she has no power to move or speak. The Greys perform a general examination on the whole body. And it goes on in other details, which I'll spare you. They're not graphic necessarily, but I think you kind of get it. The examination generally lasts 10 or 20 minutes. The Greys are fast, efficient, and focused on their tasks. And if you've heard other stories, there's a very clinical. It's always been these abductions and these examinations have always been described as very clinical, emotionless. They're there doing a job. They don't care. Like, as if the humans have no personality or feelings, et cetera, et cetera. Those seem to be common threads. And if you've ever talked to anyone who has experienced an abduction, you understand that it's not something that they're like, at least initially, they don't seem to be like, oh my God, you got to get over here. Wait till you hear this shit, man. I can't wait to tell you this. It's not the vibe. That's never really the vibe, ever. Let's talk about stigmata. How does that even tie into this? And stigmata is like the signs of Jesus being crucified. That's my understanding of stigmata, often called a miracle. Some saints have had stigmata, and that's like one of the miracles, because you have to perform, I think, two miracles to be canonized as a saint. Stigmata. Critics argue that the physically observable after effects of UFO abductions, the black and blue marks, the holes in the nose, blood loss, scars, and urological and gynecological after effects are a type of, quote, stigmata, similar to the stigmata that appear on monks who meditate intensely for years on the wounds Christ received during crucifixion. Such monks are definitely obsessed with the crucifixion. Jacobs pointed out, however, that far from being obsessed with UFO abductions, the abductee exhibits physical after effects without even being aware that she is an abductee. Prior to the recovery of their memories, abductees are not aware that they have been abducted. They are generally not interested in UFO abductions and have not read abduction literature. Clearly, they are not obsessed with the subject. Another argument against the stigmata hypothesis is the presence of devices and substances that are not produced by the abductee's body at all, such as the implant or the gelatinous substance found between the legs of some women after their abduction. Now, some of this is graphic. Now, let me see when I can... copyright 1999, so 22 years ago. I'll look into more of the history of this specific book. So this is interesting because I've never really heard this about stigmata otherwise. The idea that these monks who are obsessed with the crucifixion, are kind of like manifesting stigmata in such a way. Because, I mean, this is not to say that that's not possible, but, clearly there definitely are people who are obsessed with abduction and alien and ufology and the like. Now, how many of those people claim to have been abducted? I don't have numbers on that. And, frankly, I'm not sure that there's any way to truly measure that kind of thing. I mean, other than asking people who have been abducted if they were interested in aliens and UFOs and abduction prior to their experience, which, many of them, according to Bernath here in these reports, many of them were not. At least the information he's pulling from. That's not to say, as someone who attended before COVID happened, somewhat regularly UFO monthly meetings about a UFO group and a paranormal group, you know, how many of those people that, you know, would be there each month, how many of them potentially were, if asked, had experienced an abduction? I'm not sure, but I know the percentage is greater than zero. I can tell you that for 100%. The question is, did they start coming to the meetings because of the abduction, or did they get abducted after they started coming to the meetings? I don't know the answers because these are speculations on my part, right? This is a conjecture. I just don't know, right? But I would argue that it's highly unlikely that there's a 0% of people who claim to have been abducted never have had any interest or knew of any of the stories, right? Now, granted, that's going to be a little bit different in modern times than it was maybe 60, 70 years ago when, the entertainment and the media and the movie and the TV stuff, it wasn't so rampant as it is now. So there's definitely going to be a difference there. I hope I'm recording. Okay, I am. I thought I forgot to hit record. So what does it all mean? I don't know what it all means other than the idea that these separate but equal recountings of abduction stories have been happening, and to discard them. I have this conversation often with people, and what's the difference between being able to accept something as real and true and part of reality without the backing of the scientific community and the things and the experiences or of what is possible that has the backing of the scientific community? And, you know, in mainstream society, mainstream media plays into all that as well. The governments of the world play into that. I'm just so tired of hearing like, yeah, we can't handle it. We're not ready for it. We'll be too scared to hear the truth. I'm just so tired of that whole narrative. That narrative is not true to me. And I'm telling you it's not true to me because I've decided that. Okay. People have been told something so long that they believe it. And in my opinion, this is the case. With the alien, you know, UFO stuff. We've been shown imagery. We've been told the narrative so many times for so long. People believe it. People believe that everyone's going to freak out. And people believe everyone's going to freak out if there's like some kind of natural disaster or whatever like that. And I'm just like, well, people freak out when their team wins the Super Bowl. So why wouldn't they freak out if aliens landed on the White House lawn? Well, that's a little bit different. That's people like getting drunk and celebrating and losing control and setting cars on fire because their favorite college won the national championship in basketball. Now, I do not believe that there would be a freak out, right? I do believe that there are survival instincts that get triggered and the reptilian brain takes over when people feel like their livelihood and or their survival will be threatened, that they may regress into lower levels of the brain and become more animalistic in certain ways. Is that possible? Of course it is. Of course it is. Okay, but even like we talk about this all the time, even if aliens show up tomorrow, you still got to poop, right? You still got to eat dinner. You still got to do these things. Life will go on. Life continues and it'll be different. Life on Our Planet is a documentary by David Attenborough. He calls it his witness statement. I believe that's the name of it. It's on Netflix. It is incredible. It is so fucking incredible. It's beautiful. It's fucking heartbreaking. And it's also just brilliantly made and just beautiful. And David Attenborough, I didn't really know the story on David Attenborough. And it's just like, oh my God, he's never going to die. I don't want him to die physically in his current form. But even after that happens, he will never die. He's with us. He's with us forever. David Attenborough, oh my God. Is there anybody better than David Attenborough on this planet? I just don't know. I love David Attenborough. So I can't recommend watching that enough. It's shattering. It's shattering. Watching that. I mean, I might watch it every 6 months just as a reminder, you know, about things I should be doing in my life better, how I can be more green. And not only can I be more green, I have to be we all have to be. And I think I do a pretty good job of recycling and all these things, and you know, but how big is my carbon footprint? And it's like, you know, I'm looking around my room right now. I'm just thinking, Jesus, man, you need all this shit? What the fuck is wrong with you? But I get caught up in it, man. I get caught up in it, right? We all do. And we can all do better. We can sit here and mope about it. We got caught up in it. Or we can move forward, do a better job. And David Attenborough would thank us for it if he was here. Let's talk about the mind scan. Extracting data and turning terror into love. This is interesting. Greys stare into the abductee's eyes at numerous times throughout the abduction. The staring is used to communicate with the abductee, to control them, and examine their mental and emotional state. But there is one particular time in which the staring procedure is very intense. Jacobs calls this mind scan. Mind scan is performed by a taller gray who approaches the abductee with an air of authority after the smaller grays have completed the physical examination and implanted the device. The taller gray gives orders and the smaller grays obey. Sometimes the taller gray does the physical exam, but mind scan is his main interest. The abductee lies on the table during mind scan, and the taller gray bends over, moves very close to the abductee, and stares deeply into their eyes. The abductee finds that they have no power to close their eyes or remove their eyes from his. They feel that he is extracting data from their mind. Their will is overcome. They cannot fight him. During mind scan, the taller gray often creates pleasurable feelings in the abductee that makes them feel very attracted to him. The taller gray is so powerful that he can make many abductees forget their previous terror, repulsion, and outrage, at least for the time being. He forges a strong psychological bond between himself and the abductee. And so Jacob calls this bonding. By staring deeply into their eyes, he creates the feeling that he's actually a good person. They feel a desire to associate with him and do not want to leave. They surrender themselves to his program and assist him in whatever way they can. Now, this goes on to get a little more graphic and in detail and such, and I'm going to spare you those details. But just know this. This doesn't sound like something everybody's chomping at the bit to go experience, right? So this is not something that you ever hear about when it comes to, like, let's say, Dr. Stephen Greer's program, that, you know, CE5. That's contact, which is different than abduction, right? Like we were talking about. So do people want this to happen to them? Most people do not. I think we all agree with that. But the point is, I'm over here talking all the time about if aliens travel through space-time, they're more advanced than us. They don't need to be hurting us. They don't need to be trying to wipe off humans or enslave them. But it's like, well, then what's going on here with these abductions? Why are people being abducted against their will? And is there a greater good that's being done that is, you know, beyond our understanding at this time? Because all we can see is the immediate harm and the immediate fear and terror and pain that they're causing in individuals who are abducted, whether they remember it or not. It doesn't seem right. And morality comes into the question. What is right? What is wrong? Do we have the same standards of morality that other beings from other places have? It would seem that even if we do, they don't seem to care in regard to their behavior toward us or with us, much in the same way we would not treat our fellow human being the same way we would even treat our dogs, our cats, specifically even other animals. And I know some of you right now are going, I treat my dog better than I treat other people, and that's fine. But in general, there's not an agreement in the world that all humans should do that. So, you know, if that analogy is causing you to, you know, have resistance, just think of cows or chickens or mice or rats or coyotes or raccoons or ants. Ants are animals. Ants are such animals. Right? So, is it that? That's much easier to understand it in that way. If we consider, I used to make a joke that we're the rats of the universe. Maybe that's the abduction thing, right? Aliens are just trying out their new shampoo on us or seeing if we're allergic to their lipstick. Now, that could be the case, potentially, which would relieve them of all moral obligation to be treating us with the same respect that they might treat one another. That doesn't really sit well with us, does it? Doesn't sit well with me. Contact is one thing, abduction is another. Not interested in the abduction game at all. Zero interest in that game. Contact, on the other hand, come on the podcast. Let's talk about it. Let's discuss why you think it's okay to abduct people. You know, I'll ask the hard-hitting questions. Now, can you imagine? Because due to COVID, I won't even let an alien in my house. I'm sorry, can we Zoom? I'm sorry, we're going to have to do this on Zoom because, you know, COVID. Okay. Can't be having strangers in the house during COVID. I mean, I got roommates. Aye, aye, aye. Can you imagine? Maybe they can just materialize through the wall. No one will even know they're here. Who knows? I'm not trying to break the rules. I'm not trying to have a super spreader event with, you know, with the galaxy. Yeah, so there's some dark. I mean, I guess the overall, there's some darkness in what we were talking about today. We're talking about abduction, you know, so of course there's darkness there. Alien abduction is, being abducted, humans being abducted is a large part of ufology, the history, the folklore, the stories, the fear that surrounds it, the narratives in Hollywood movies and television shows that kind of generate hysteria and otherwise. But if it's real, and I am of the belief that it is, it's difficult to rationalize these two ideas. And it doesn't mean we have to. Things are very complicated and they can be multiple things simultaneously, right? But trying to rationalize the idea that they can travel through space and time and yet they are doing these seemingly basic level bad things, right? It's like, oh, you can travel through space and time and you're kidnapping people. Like, that's your fucking gig? You're coming through space-time to steal people while they're sleeping to do scientific experiments on them? Like, don't you have something better to fucking do? Excuse me. Hello. This is, you can't find a better use of your time than treating us like lab rats. Excuse me. Hello. There's nothing else in this universe literally you could be doing. Hello, excuse me. It bothers me. It does. It bothers me. I don't know. I don't know how many different races of aliens are out there. I don't know if the Heinz 57 is real. There's a Galactic Federation of 23. I don't know if there's good ones and there's bad ones. I don't know. But hello, excuse me. There's absolutely nothing else on your wish list right now at your disposal as you travel forward and backwards in time through the fabric of the universe than stealing someone from their sleep so you can stick a pole into their nose, into their brain, into their arm, into their butt. Are they choking me or not? They not my... Do they not want me saying this? What if I just had a heart attack right now? No one would ever hear this because how's it going to get uploaded? It's not like people are going to come into my room like, oh my God, he had a heart attack. What was he recording right before? He was doing this bit called Hello, Excuse Me, Mr. Alien, I think was probably the name of the bit. There's nothing else you'd rather be doing right now in the whole entire universe, literally, than abducting people from their farmhouse. Hello, excuse, it's fun to do. I apologize, but it's fun to do. It's just, it's fun to do the hello, excuse me. we having some fun over here or what? Okay, so, formerly top secret, Air Force reports of encounters between our jets and extraterrestrial vehicles, molecular biological analysis of extraterrestrial technology in our cells. This was obviously a very small part of this book that I read from today. Well, maybe we'll read some more from it in the future. This does tie into some future conversations I will be having on the Mindcast. You can bet your sweet tush it does. This isn't just a random, I mean, it is kind of a random book pull, but these themes will be tying into and do tie into past conversations I've had not too long ago. If you listen to the Greg and Mama Sue interviews, I believe there's been three total. And future conversations that we will be having, because we're talking about UFOs, we're talking about aliens, we're talking about cattle, bovine, unusual bovine deaths, UPDs, or, you know, as a lot of people call them, cattle mutilations. We're talking about OMA, aka Sasquatch, telepathic communication with them. And there's all these things are tying together. What does it all mean? Is there a narrative that's unfolding? Is there a story that's bigger than all of us that is waiting to be told? I guess we'll just have to wait and find out. But maybe this is the story because we're already all telling it. And it's not just me and it's not just you. It's all of us are tapped into the global unconsciousness or the collective unconscious, as maybe smarter people are referring to it. It's like a global unconsciousness out there. You mean collective unconscious? I mean, it's like globally there's an unconscious part of it. Okay, I think we got that. And that's just the way it's going to be. Okay. Agreed. Okay, fine. Agreed. It's been almost a year since lockdown, so it's like we all have cabin fever, like a 12-month cabin fever. What do you? I used to lose my mind. If you listen to my last album, it's called Ryan Singer's Free Love. It's available for free download on RyanSingerComedy.com. It's on Spotify. Give it a listen, please. Share it. You know, I even a fraction of a penny helps pay keeps my lights on. And there's so many comedians putting out albums nowadays. You can get lost out there. So please, you know, show some support and spread my comedy around. Especially if you enjoy it. But even if you don't enjoy it, still spread it around. You'd be doing me a favor. But there's a bit on there called Hot Thoughts. And if you listen to that bit, it's me talking about cabin fever and the craziness that can come from cabin fever. One time when I was sick and I was in my room for, I think it was like 2 weeks, let alone 11 months. Holy shnikes. Yay, yay, yay. I love you. I hope you love yourself. I hope you're doing well. I hope you're hanging in there. You can sign up for the waiting list for Crystallize, crystallize.app /early access. You get on the waiting list, you get free access to the premium features for at least a month, if not more, depending on how far up the list you move. How do you move up the list? That's easy. Use your referral link, send it to all your friends, anyone you've ever met throughout the entirety of your life. And if they sign up, boom, you move up like 25 spots on the list. We are approaching 3,000 people on the waiting list, and that might seem daunting. But you get like 15 people to sign up. Guess what? You're like number one on the list probably. So, you know, I think I did the math correctly on that in my brain. So don't give up hope. There's always hope. Move up that list, baby. Share the love. Give me a follow on Instagram and Twitter at RaiSing. You can also follow the app at Crystallize App. And it's EYES. is how you spell eyes, Crystal Eyes, all one word, Crystal Eyes app. So thank you to everybody who's signed up already. We're very excited. We're moving forward, making progress. Ooh, baby, 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 baby. Very exciting. I'm a small business owner. I mean, I always have been, I guess, but I've like LLC, trademarks, all this stuff. It's like, wow, this is what being a business person's like. I've begrudgingly embraced capitalism, as my therapist would say. A burgeoning capitalist. Oh, can you believe it? Anyway, lots of great talks coming soon. I got a triangle talk coming up soon. That's like a round table, but with three of us. I like triangle table better. So what else is out there? Take care of yourselves. Take care of yourselves. You define your own success. You get to decide when you are successful. You don't have to listen to the world and their bullshit definition of what success is. You get to do that. You get to decide what makes you happy. When I grow up, I want to be happy. That's what my kids are going to say if I ever have children. Maybe in the year 3000, I'll have children. You know, because death isn't real. Okay, I'm not going to see you at a live show anytime soon, at least not for the next couple months, I imagine, until I'm vaccinated and you're vaccinated. So until then, I know comedians are out there doing live shows, and, you know, many of them are my friends, but I'm just not going to be out there doing live shows until, at the very least, I'm vaccinated so I don't get sick. No, I'm just kidding. I'll do it safely if there are safe situations, and I will be doing it safely. I'll be doing a show on Wednesday night on Zoom. I have a Tuesday podcast every Tuesday called In the Green Zoom. Jessica, my manager, has all of her clients. We all get on there in every Tuesday night, and then it becomes a podcast a couple days later. The last Thursday of the month typically is a live stand-up comedy show with all of us. It's so much fun. Anyway, so thanks for your support over at Patreon, patreon.com/RyanSinger. Love you. $1, $3 a month. Gets you everything. Cool. Well, that's going to do it. And if I don't see you on Zoom, I'll see you at the watering hole on the astral plane.